On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radar. It's Monday, the 14th of April, and the time is 5 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today I'm joined in studio by Bernadette Simon.
Okay, it's your girl, Bernadette, and as always, we are here to bring you the most impactful, thought-provoking stories shaping our communities and the world beyond.
That's right, Bernadette. Now, whether it's local developments or global health alerts, we've got your afternoon news fix right here until 14:30. And remember, this isn't just about tuning in.
Yeah, it's about engaging. So if you've got something to say, call us after each news update on 083-288-401. We want to hear from you.
Now let's dive in. Today marks World Chagas Disease Day, a global call to action for a disease often overlooked and under-discussed. Now, Chagas disease, sometimes called the silent or silent disease, affects some of the world's most vulnerable communities. It mostly impacts people living in poverty without access to proper health care or political representation.
And that's what makes it so dangerous. The disease progresses slowly, often without any symptoms at all. But without early diagnosis and treatment, it can cause severe damage to the heart and digestive system, and sadly, it can be fatal.
And that's what makes it so dangerous. The symptom progresses slowly, often without any symptoms at all. But without early diagnosis and treatment, it can cause severe damage to the heart and digestive system, and sadly, it can be fatal.
Yeah, this year's theme is Prevent, Control, Care, Everyone's Role in Chagas Disease, highlighting that we all have a part to play, from raising awareness to supporting access to care.
Now, first recognized globally in 2020, this day shines a spotlight on a disease that affects more than 7 million people worldwide, with an estimated 10,000 deaths annually and over 100 million at risk.
Yeah, although it's most common in continental Latin America, Chagas disease is increasingly being detected in other parts of the world, making it a growing global health concern.
So today, as we mark World Chagas Disease Day, let's remember, early detection saves lives. Access to healthcare is a right, not a privilege. And every voice matters in this fight.
Stay with us. Namibia more updates coming your way. And don't forget, after each bulletin, we open the lines for you to join the conversation. That number is, the number again is 083-288-401.
You're listening to On the Radar, where your voice meets the news. We'll be right back. At least 7 European companies are seeking to invest in Namibia's burgeoning green hydrogen system, with a projected investment pipeline exceeding 20 billion euros. That is approximately 430 Namibian billion dollars. Now, this was revealed by Anna Beatrice Martens, European Union ambassador to Namibia, during the official opening of the High Iron Oshivela plant over the weekend. Now, the High Iron Oshivela plant, located near Arandas in the Erongo region, is Africa's first carbon-neutral production site. Backed by 600 million Namibian dollar investment, the project attracted global collaboration from the European Union, the United States, China, Japan, and the United Kingdom. Now, constructed in under 12 months, it has been reported that the plant created around 400 jobs during its first phase, with Namibian youth accounting for 90% of the workforce. Now, as one of the continent's pioneering green iron facilities, Oshivela is committed to zero emissions production. Martin said the investment demonstrates growing global confidence in Namibia's green hydrogen ambitions, with companies like High Iron and Clean G already completing their pilot phases. Now, while others such as Zero and Hyphen are expected to reach final investment decisions by the end of the year, she noted that Europe's involvement in Namibia's green energy space goes beyond corporate interest, with the EU and its member states combining public funding with private sector in facility initiatives. Martens stated that the EU and the Netherlands have pledged $258 million in grants to Namibia's Sustainable Development Goal 1, that is SDG 1, fund to support the second phase of High Iron's project, which will see production scale up from 15,000 to 200,000 tons of direct reduced iron annually. Now, the ambassador highlighted that the green hydrogen sector is key to decarbonizing heavy industries such as steel production, which contributes about 9% of global CO2 emissions. Let's now hear from Anna Beatrice Martens, EU ambassador to Namibia on high iron.
And more is to come, as a second phase will lead to the tenfold growth of its outputs. Namibians are at the heart of this transition, of creating local content and much-needed jobs for young Namibians, but also at demonstrating that there is a market for new green technologies. Steel is one of the hard-to-abate sectors that are responsible for 9% of global CO2 emissions. Together, we are showing the world that it is possible to make change. We are proud to partner with Namibia in making green transition a reality as Team Europe and with the EU's Global Gateway Investment Initiative for Africa. The federal government in Germany has been instrumental in supporting High Iron with grant money in its experimental phase. And I'm very happy to announce here today that the EU and the Netherlands are joining as partners in phase two with 12.9 million euros or 258 million Namibian dollars grant contribution through the Namibia's SDG 1 fund. High Iron's prospective offtake agreements with leading European and Asian manufacturing companies are a clear sign that there is a market. What we are witnessing today shows that the EU-Namibia strategic partnership is about action and delivery of concrete results. Not only do Europe's ambitious decarbonization targets and regulatory tools like the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism make us reliable off-takers, EU companies are also leading investors in Namibia. They are bringing technology, growth, and job opportunities. Currently, we count 7 European companies that are exploring investments in Namibia's green hydrogen economy, with a prospective investment pipeline exceeding 20 billion euros or 430 billion Namibian dollars. High Iron and Clean Energy are among the first to complete their first pilot phase. Other businesses involving European capital and technologies such as Zero and Hyphen are expected to reach final investment decisions by the end of next year. The EU and member state governments have been complementing European business initiatives with targeted support in Team Europe spirit. The EU support encompasses investments through blended finance, capacity building to the Green Hydrogen Program, which is here represented by Mr. Newper, to develop an enabling regulatory framework and perform ESG assessments. Further building blocks of the EU support include capacity to upgrade Namibia's port infrastructure, vocational and educational training programs in the green energy sector, and support to Namibia's civil society to hold up the voice of transparency and civil participation on the renewable energy and extractive industries. This comprehensive 360-degree approach, as we call it, embraces all aspects of development so that our grants and loans can leverage private investments that are viable, that create quality jobs and lift people out of poverty while respecting civic, social and environmental standards. These are the principles defining the EU's Global Gateway proposition today and tomorrow in its partnership with Africa and with Namibia.
High Iron, a partnership between Namibian and German companies, has developed a technology for effectively addressing this challenge by producing iron at zero emissions. Now, with support from the German Federal Ministry for Economic Affairs and Climate Action High Iron broke ground in November 2023 and started construction in April 2024.
At the same event, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah addressed earlier doubts and signaled strong support for the sector, assuring investors that Namibia remains open for businesses. Nandi-Ndaitwah called on investors to follow High Iron lead by tapping into Namibia's green industrialization drive, saying the country is ready for business and committed to creating a conducive investment climate. She described the project as milestone achievement aligned with Namibia's industrialization and value action agenda. The president lauded the local workforce, particularly young Namibians who led construction of the facility in just under 12 months. In this first phase, the High Iron Oshivela plant is set to produce 5 tons of green iron per hour, operating exclusively during daylight hours with power supplied by a 25 megawatt solar plant and 13.4 megawatts of battery storage. Their goal for this phase is to produce 15,000 tons of green iron annually, offsetting on estimated 27 tons of carbon emission. Phase 2, scheduled for 2026, will scale up production with 250 megawatt of solar energy and 150 megawatt of battery storage. Of battery storage, the plant will be able to operate around the clock, boosting up to 2,100 tons of green iron per year. Germany ambassador to Namibia, Thorsten Hatter spoke about Germany's investment in the sector and the growing partnership between the two nations on green hydrogen. Let's take a listen to what we had to say.
Preventing climate change, pushing for energy transition, ranges high on our German and Namibian agenda. Just in June 2020, as one of the first countries in the world to do so, Germany published its national hydrogen strategy. And since then, we have redoubled our transformation efforts to renewable energy and to promote ways to decarbonize our whole industry. Unfortunately, geopolitical risks and instabilities have increased. Mankind does not only have to cope with climate change, but at the same time, we have to secure the rules-based international order. We are indeed more than ever convinced that the rules-based international order is the only way to solve our global problems and that international cooperation brings benefits for all countries. I therefore want to thank the government of the Republic of Namibia for its invaluable contribution to the Pact for the Future, which our two countries steered successfully through the United Nations last year. Germany, I want to assure you, will continue to be a reliable partner for Namibia and for other developing countries. We are convinced that international solidarity and our development cooperation are important pillars of our thriving bilateral relationship. The focus of preventing climate change and fostering our bilateral partnership with Namibia is strongly reflected in our bilateral development cooperation. Our activities encompass many projects of various ministries as well as institutions in the area of renewable energy, energy access, energy storage, energy policy, and green hydrogen. So today there are many cooperation projects and joint ventures between Namibian and German or other European companies in the area that I just mentioned. And it is very important to underline the High Iron Oshivela project is outstanding. It is unique and promising in many aspects. Since April 2024, in a record time of less than a year, High Iron erected what is now Namibia's second biggest renewable energy power station. In addition, they erected Namibia's biggest battery energy storage system and the biggest electrolyzer in Southern Africa. All this has been achieved with Namibian engineers, Namibian technicians, Namibian workers, creating employment and income opportunities. By the end of 2024, High Iron started with the first production of green hydrogen-based direct oxygen, reduced iron in the world, ever. Let that sink in. Ever. Ever. Exactly. So from now on, From now on, Namibia produces direct reduced iron without CO2 emissions on an industrial level. High iron, therefore, is the front runner on the way to establish worldwide a new technology and a standard for the production of direct reduced iron. And furthermore, this direct reduced iron is globally competitive. High iron already at the end of 2023 secured its first off-taker agreement with a German-based automotive company, Benteler, which in the end wants to buy 200,000 tons of direct reduced iron. You, Madam President, and your government are focused on value addition. High iron is a perfect example that demonstrates that true value addition in Namibia is achievable, is creating jobs, and is creating income. And beyond that, there's much more on the horizon. Green hydrogen is a pivotal stepping stone that offers more opportunities for the green industrialization of Namibia. The achievement of the High Iron Oshiwela project has been accomplished on the basis of a close and trustful cooperation between the Namibian and the German company, and of course, as was alluded to, funding from the German government, the Ministry of Economics and Climate Action. This project that we are witnessing here today showcases a true bilateral partnership. That is exactly what Germany wants. A true partnership, that is what we want.
Now, phase two of the High Iron Oshiwela plant will be able to operate around the clock, boosting output to 200,000 tons of green iron per year and not the earlier indicated figure. Now, with that being said, we take a trip to the marketplace. You are tuned into On The Radar. Stay tuned as we will be back shortly with more news coming your way. Do take note, our studio line is very much open and we invite you to partake in the news bulletin. That is by dialing on studio number 083-288-401.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sung Fuor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
President Netumbonandindaito says Namibia must begin moving towards establishing a nuclear power plant using its uranium resources to meet local energy demands and contribute to global clean energy supply. Speaking during a visit to Rosie Uranium Mine over the weekend, the president emphasized that the country's uranium must be used for peaceful purpose to power Namibia and support development goals both locally and internationally. There is no dream too big to be achieved collectively. Let us start moving towards the nuclear power plant in Namibia and identify potential partnership to achieve this goal, she said. Namibia's uranium exports surged to over 15.5 billion in 2023, making it the third largest uranium producer in the world, behind Kazakhstan and Canada. The mineral remains a critical revenue stream and strategic resources for the country. Namibia's uranium exports surged to over 15.5 billion in 2023, making the third largest uranium producer in the world behind Kazakhstan and Canada. Then mineral remains a critical revenue stream and strategic resources for the country.
Nandindaitwa reiterated that their government's mixed energy policy aims to ensure a reliable and clean energy mix, with uranium playing a central role in the transition. During her engagement with Rosin Uranium's management, the president applauded the mine for its resiliency and continued production, especially the extension of its life from 2027 to 2036. However, she emphasized that the sector must shift from raw export to value, outchain, and local benefications.
And the mining industry, which dominates our economy, has to make a big contribution to this job creation. I know that the sector does contribute greatly to our fiscus, and I am convinced that with the full potential of our mining sector, a lot can be done from this sector. When I said with our resources and our population, we are just too few to be poor. And it is so difficult when you see Namibia to appear as we should be begging. We should be the one to be begged. I know it will not be something to be done at a go, but really we have to start. So I commend the Rossing Uranium Management for your management style and resilience during the 10 down years of the mine, that you have now worked hard and extend the life of the mine to 2036. I know one of the most important factors is that the mining industry needs to look after their workers, particularly that some of the activities have serious health risk. And I was so impressed to hear the safety measures that you are having at Rossing Uranium. Of course, accidents are accidents, and they cannot be ruled out. I would really ask the mining industry to put in place some measures whereby should an accident occur, maybe one way or the other, your worker has been exposed, particularly to radiation, that might have permanent impact on individual. Let that person not be writing out of the support by the mining sector, but to be given permanent support because the person suffered while on duty. I really asking, it's one of the area I have to discuss with the mining industry, so that I do not want to see a person affected on the job and then just given whatever and be sent home to languish in poverty in their villages, but to be permanently taken care of by the mine or by the industry. We really have to be taking care of ourselves. Again, our mining sector is one sector I was really impressed when briefing us, and then you say you are paying your workers well. The mining sector in Namibia should give its worker a living wage, accommodation, and to look after them while in the service and after they finish their service. That is very, very important.
And Ndaitwa's latest remarks on nuclear energy echo previous statements made last year when, as vice president, she advocated for Namibia to explore the benefits of participating in the downstream nuclear value chain. Now, this came as the country continued to strengthen its role as a major uranium supplier. Her comments followed a statement in March last year by Russian state-owned energy company Rosatom, which proposed that building a nuclear power plant in Namibia could help stabilize global uranium prices. Now, we'll focus on this right after this commercial break.
Mm-hmm. Taking flights has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online.
Now we continue. Russian state-owned energy company Rosatom, which proposed that building a nuclear power plant in Namibia could help stabilize global uranium prices and support the country's path toward energy self-sufficiency. Rosatom's national manager, Victor Riedel, told the media that tapping into Namibia's own uranium resources for domestic energy production could reduce costs compared to relying on international markets. Shortly after China also signaled interest in taking part in constructing a nuclear power plant in Namibia, should the government proceed with such plans. Now, during her visit, the president also called on mining companies to invest in youth development, create sustainable and quality jobs, and ensure workers are treated with dignity through fair wages, housing, healthcare, and retirement packages. She lauded the Housing Foundation, the Rosing, pardon me, Foundation, for its corporate social responsibility in sectors such as education, health, agriculture, and community upliftment, but added that Aranda's residents must tangibly feel the benefits of living in a mining town.
The capacity building is another area that I would really want the mining industry to focus on by providing scholarships, job attachments, training, internship, and to identify young entrepreneurs within your operations and then empower them to branch off to other sectors of our economy where they can produce or create additional jobs. I know the mining industry is capital intensive. And as much as people applaud Namibia because of our mining, yes, we can experience economic growth. But economic growth without development does not really make an impact in the ordinary life of a citizen. Because of uranium, we can be seen as dominating the world market. Or we can say the trade between Namibia and a certain country is high simply because of the cost of uranium. But not everything that is exported or as a result of export comes back into the Namibian economy. I have seen the figures here. They are good enough, but still I feel that really we need to do more. For example, if somebody is working at Rosing Uranium or any other mine, and that person is an entrepreneur and wants to branch off into any other sector, let's say for argument's sake, in the food production, why the industry or that particular enterprise cannot assist such a person with a certain level of capital, because you know when that person becomes successful, other people will be employed. And that can be accredited to your company having the one who has empowered that individual. So therefore, I am really grateful as to what is happening here. As I understand, in Arandas is the only town in Namibia that does not have shacks. So you have citizens who are properly accommodated. And really, I will make a deep study on Arandas, how that has happened, because I want to see it in every town of Namibia. I would really don't want to see 10, 20 years down the line, we are still having a number of Namibians who do not have proper accommodation in a country with such resources. And this is only possible if all of us are taking part. Arandas was also a town where the citizens were very much empowered. Empowered in the sense that they were able to have their own businesses. For example, fabric, tailoring, and many others. And this was the empowerment that has come from the foundation. And therefore, in addition to the commendable job which the foundation is doing, as elaborated today, I would really want the foundation to build the entrepreneurs, focus on entrepreneurs who will really be contributing to the growth of our economy and to create jobs. If I can, I might even moving forward to have a competition between the private sectors that every year they might inform the office of the president as to how many extra jobs have been created as a result of their support, not just within their own main operation, but across the country. Because really job creation has to become a priority of all of us. Once a person is employed, is having a job, they will be able to decide as to whether they want to eat brown bread or white bread. Today, because they depend on government's food ration, it's the government that decides that we can only buy you maize meal, fish and cooking oil, and that becomes their diet. But with the employment, they can decide as to what to do. And that's why I'm asking the mining industry to work with us or to work with us in improving on the living standard of our people.
With that being said, we also invite you to partake in the news bulletin right here on the radar. Our studio line is open, and that is on 083-288-4091. We're taking a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly, so don't go anywhere.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. Monday's edition of the Villager newspaper is out. Grab your copy and read up on the stories we covered. The headlines that are currently in Monday's edition: European firms target $430 billion investment in Namibia's green hydrogen. Primary sector slowed Namibia's economic growth in 2024. Agent called to upgrade Charlie Cutline Road. Rundu woman thrives in woodcraft business. Nedbank fuels weekend of cycling. the underpaid civil servants, using AI to win. A leader's mindset in a less AI-receptive world. To stay ahead on the latest news by subscribing to the Eagle Media House WhatsApp channel. That is by sending a text on 081-200-4144 for updates. In other news, Namibia's energy sector is preparing to enter the next phase of market reform, which will allow eligible electricity consumers to import power directly by 2026. Now, this announcement was made by Chama Chivikwa, Deputy Board Chairperson of the Electricity Control Board, ECB, during the market model implementation workshop for the modified single buyer, also known as MSB model, in Swakopmund. Chivikwa said that the country is currently in phase 1B of the MSB market model introduced in 2019 to liberalize Namibia's electricity market and pave the way for greater private sector participation. Now, he emphasized that phase 2, which will enable contestable consumers to import electricity, is on the horizon but will only be implemented after a comprehensive review of the current phase. The MSB model marks a policy shift from the traditional single-buyer framework when Namibia's national utility, NamPower, was the sole purchaser of electricity. Under the MSB, independent power producers, also known as IPPs, and large consumers, referred to as contestable consumers, are permitted to engage in bilateral power transactions for a portion of their energy needs. So far, 36 IPPs contribute approximately 240 megawatts of installed generation capacity to Namibia's grid, with 28 megawatts already traded through bilateral agreements under the MSB framework. Namibia aims to reduce its dependency on electricity imports, currently standing at around 60% to 30% by 2028. Now, as outlined in the National Integrated Resource Plan, he warns that recent electricity supply challenges in the region have highlighted the urgency of building local generation capacity. Namibia's strategic goal, he said, is not only to achieve energy security, but also to become a net exporter of renewable energy. According to Chivikwa, Namibia's transition to an energy regulator, not just for electricity, but across all energy, forms under the pending National Energy Regulatory Authority, NERA. The bill signals an institutional evolution that aligns with broader policy goals. Let's now listen to Chama Chivikwa.
Through the MSP model, we've opened up our electricity market to new players and innovative solutions, paving the way for increased competition and investment. The MSP allows selective electricity consumers and independent power producers, or IPPs, to engage in direct transactions for a portion of their electricity needs. It is a game changer in how electricity is bought and sold in Namibia. This model encourages effective competition, thereby creating a level playing field for industry players and enabling IPPs to compete on pricing. And the objectives are clear. One, to drive down tariffs. Two, increase local generation capacity. Three, stimulate private sector investment. And four, reduce fiscal burden on the government. Our objective today is to engage in a meaningful discussion on the challenges and opportunities we face in implementing the MSP market framework. We aim to assess the progress made thus far and explore the steps required to unlock additional potential and capacity under the MSP model. I'm pleased to note that early adopters of this initiative are already experiencing tangible benefits, particularly lower electricity tariffs.
Let's now pause here to make room for a scheduled commercial break, but don't go anywhere. We'll continue with this news item when we return.
Onkundana ombwanawa kani hauto. Owa pumbwa oshimaliwa meendelelo, ndele owuna osheenditho. Owuna aaniilonga ya pumbwa okufutwa, ashike mboka yena oondjo dhoye otayeende kashona. Ngele onkalamwenyo otayi nyengana, AutoCash otayi ningi ompu. Tu etela ohauto yoye, eto pewa epresenda 45% dhongushu yosheenditho shoye. Muule ashike wiminute 45. Ino pumbwa oka payslip nenge o statement yombaanga. Ohauto yoye ashike. Mona omula oshimaliwa ethimbo weshi pumbwa.
Easy money.
Tu dhengela nena ko 061-600-6650. Ano ko 061-600-6650. Oshipulela ko AutoCash.
Let's now resume that talk by Chama Chivikwa, who is the Deputy Board Chairperson of the Electricity Control Board on electricity imports.
During this workshop, we will hear directly from some of those market players about their experiences and cost savings. Your presence here today, distinguished audience, as IPPs, regulators, utilities, financiers, development partners, advisors, and contestable customers, underscores the importance of this workshop. More importantly, it reflects our shared understanding that a successful market reform requires the collective efforts of all stakeholders. Beyond its structural implications, the MSP model aligns closely with Namibia's energy vision as outlined in the national policies. Our goal is to become a renewable energy hub and a net exporter of energy. By spurring additional generation capacity, we enhance our energy security and reduce dependency on our electricity imports. And according to the National Integrated Resource Plan, NIRP, which I think tomorrow may be the same, but with a broader mandate, according to NIRP, we aim to reduce electricity imports from 60% to 30% by 2028. And that has to do with the fact that we need to have a better and more secured electricity supply, and we don't necessarily depend so much on imports. As it happened this year, earlier this year, end of last year, it was not a pretty picture. So that would assist us to grow our baseload and to ensure that we have security of supply. Effective regulation, today's focus, will play a key role in achieving this target and attracting necessary investments. To date, Namibia boasts the following capacities, and the CEO has alluded to this. 36 IPPs contributing 240 megawatt of installed capacity. Of the above, 28 megawatt is under the bilateral MSB arrangement. Now, this seems like a small number. If you come from South Africa, it's like, what is it, Khayelitsha Township or something like that. But for us, it says a lot. Access to both MSB and the Southern Africa power pool SAP markets is expected to accelerate this growth. At the 2023 MSB SAP Access Conference, we saw encouraging momentum when we launched this SAP and MSB market access guide. So I'm pleased to announce that Solar Century Africa, in partnership with Sino Energy, is constructing a 20 megawatt Hertz 1 solar plant, which will trade on a sub platform. It is set to reach commercial operation by mid-2025, perhaps at the end of the day, mid-2025, it's this year now. Maybe they will announce it this afternoon. And more such projects are anticipated this year to utilize the 120 of available export capacity for intermittent power. The phased implementation of the MSP has allowed us to make steady progress toward a resilient and stable electricity market. We are currently in phase 1B, and we firmly believe that expanding the role of independent suppliers and generators will stimulate competition and deliver better value to customers. Although phase 2, which allows contestable customers to import power, is still to be. It is expected to commence in 2026. It is crucial that we first conduct a thorough analysis of phase 1 implementation and understand the full scope of the MSP model. More importantly, we must ensure that we believe that we have achieved our key target of reaching 80% local electricity self-sufficiency. So we are uniquely positioned not only to meet our own energy needs, but to become a regional exporter, deepening integration with Southern Africa. And we're laying the foundation for emerging industries powered by renewables. The MSP market model is the result of government's proactive efforts to establish enabling regulatory frameworks and incentives. It is now the turn of the private sector to step up and move forward and seize the vast potential within the Namibian evolving energy ecosystem. The promise of electricity goes far beyond raw numbers of kilowatts and megawatts or terawatts or whatever. It touches the hopes and aspirations of every Namibian.
As we have just heard, the country is edging closer to a more open and competitive energy market, one that could change the game for consumers and independent producers alike. With a modified single buyer model gaining traction and reforms aimed at reducing import dependency, all eyes are now on how this shift will affect the ordinary Namibian and the energy ecosystem. So joining us now to unpack what this means in practical terms, especially the import of electricity by eligible consumers and the road ahead for the modified single buyer model, is Vino Stefanis, an electrician and industry insider. Let's get into the conversation. Good afternoon, Vino Stefanis, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Good afternoon, Happy Juju, and good afternoon to the Eagle FM listenership out there.
Mm. Yes. Now, Vino, Namibia's next energy sector phase is set to allow eligible electricity consumers to import power directly by 2026. With the timing, is this something feasible?
In terms of feasibility, I'm of the view that 2026 is just
around the corner,
and we have already seen in the past that things that were probably planned to take place in a 5 years time or so didn't materialize. So I don't want to be really pessimistic, but I think Namibia have a culture of not really sticking to time frame, and this range from implementation, law, enacting laws actually, and any other project management areas. So I doubt if by 2026 issue will materialize actually.
And could you also explain to us how possibly consumers can be able to import electricity directly?
Yes, the consumers that are being referred to here, it's not actually me and you.
Yeah.
It's not actually the common men, you know, but these obviously it's for the big industries. Remember a mine is also a consumer. It's also regarded as a consumer because it consumes electricity so that it can ramp up production and all these other things. So your biggest industry, actually, we are talking about the mines here. We are talking about all these manufacturing plants that we have probably in the country, with definitely with the green hydrogen now shaking up things and all of these things. Obviously, they will need definitely power, and for them, it will be very easy if they can enter into that into that area where they can be able to import their power directly, so that it will make things easier for them in terms of now cost. And looking at things that NamPower has been always the sole actor in this whole electricity importation.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, they if the eligibility comes to pass, definitely then they can, that it will ease the burden on their side as well.
Yeah. Now, with the implementation of the modified single buyer model, could we expect household consumers digging lesser into their pockets?
That's definitely yes, because I think currently we have run about, I think, 36 IPPs. By IPPs, we mean independent power producer.
Yeah.
So, and to make it, to put it in layman's term, independent power producer is, it's happy juju having a solar power plant that has the capacity of producing, let's say, things like 12 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
And then that feeds into your national grid, which is now, which NamPower is a custodian of. So that means that in terms of competitiveness, and also in terms of the tariffs, in terms of the charges, that lessen all of these things, because at the end of the day, you have more power that is produced locally, and also that also enable a competitive market, actually.
Mm.
So in the competitive market, we all know the benefits of it. It comes with, obviously, price varies and all of these things.
Indeed. Mm.
Yes.
Now, Vino, as an electrician, what measures do you recommend the ECB to put in place to ensure this definitely does materialize?
Obviously these are the ECB definitely, obviously the initiator definitely,
yes,
because they are at the forefront of leading this particular revolutionary changes, if I can call it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not really in a best suited position to advise them on what probably things that they have to put in place. But all I can say is that they are currently the project manager of everything that is happening around with regards to the modified single buyer. Definitely, I hope they will definitely make sure that implementation and all the necessary documentation are put in place come 2026, so that by 2027, probably to 2028, until we reach our vision 2030, we'll be paying less than we will not be getting 40% of the money that of the total amount of the money that you buy electricity with, because currently let me just give you an example. Currently, in $500, if you want to buy energy for $500,
mm-hmm,
so you only get around about 200 kilowatts, which is only 40% of the money that you have spent.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely I really hope by 2027, because yeah, they said 2026, by 2027, 2028, we'll be able to dig much more or less. And also the tariff for ECB will probably be lesser than the current amount now.
Mm.
Yes.
Now, Namibia aims to reduce its dependency on electricity imports from 60% to 30%. Now, why is this crucial for Namibia, which majorly imports electricity from South Africa? And South Africa, we know, experiences load shedding here and there.
Yes. This is very, very much crucial that we reduce our dependency to South Africa, which is now the currently standing at 50%. So meaning locally we can only be able to supply our industry or our local consumption by 50%. Mm-hmm. Imagine we have probably a problem, let me say, at we have a problem at Van Eck power station.
Yeah.
Or at Wakana hydropower station. You can imagine the catastrophic state that we will be in. So dependence is always not a good thing. Not only from a national power utility point of view,
mm-hmm.
but also from even a personal point of view. So we have to castigate some of these things to also we shouldn't only look at them from a national point of view, but also from the individual perspective, you see. So, we currently import 50% of our consumption, and we spend over $1 billion per annum. Just imagine how much money is going out of the country.
Yeah.
Because we have to pay something like around about 600 million to South Africa, and then we have to pay the other 100 million to Zambia, for example, because you import from those two countries.
Yeah.
So imagine you cutting that probably even to, let's say, to or increasing our local generation to even something like 70%.
Mm.
And you calculate now the 70% of that particular billion. So then we have then more money
mm-hmm.
been circulating in our local economy, circulating in our local economy. And that opens up now for your job creation. You all know that job unemployment, it's a crisis in this country. That also encourage your industrialization, you know, and it cascades down to household consumption.
Yeah. Now,
yes.
ECB CEO Robert Kaimise stressed the need for informal regulation, pointing out that enabling a legal framework takes too long and is outdated by the time it's completed. Who actually at the policy front, Vino, would you say should speed things up?
There's a lot of layers involved, particularly when it comes to the process of enacting law.
Yeah.
You know, and the ECB, it's just one of the components, or one of the players actually, but the other role players, the law enacting comes with your legal drafters. It also has to be passed in parliament and all of these things,
mm-hmm.
this institution.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of also bureaucracy in our country, it's such disheartening to such an extent that, you know, we always have very good initiative, but again, when it comes to implementation and also passing laws, it takes too long for the common man to feel the changes here or the impact. That's a problem, actually. Look at, based on the past, actually. When you look at how law has been enacted, it takes too long, and maybe I'm just hoping with the new energetic parliament that also consists of different political parties, probably it will be, we'll get some speed and some level of accountability to make sure that these things are enacted, laws are passed in time,
mm-hmm.
and then the common man can be able to feel that impact after a year or two, not after 5 years or 10 years, and where technology have already advanced, the industry have already changed. By the time the law reach implementation phase or it's been passed, the what was passed for, it's completely already outdated, if you can call it that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm. Indeed. Vino, it's always a pleasure engaging you right here on the Radar News Bulletin, and we do appreciate you taking out your time to actually educate us on this matters.
Thank you very much. Happy. It's always a pleasure also talking to Eagle FM.
And now we pause here for a commercial break. We'll be back shortly with more news.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies,
funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Stay connected with Eagle FM, news without borders. Eagle FM is everywhere, always on, always accessible. Now, whether you're commuting, working, or relaxing at home, simply plug in your earphones and stay informed with minimal inconvenience. Our platform delivers real-time news and analysis straight to your mobile phone, keeping you in the know wherever you are. In partnership with our sister e-paper, The Villager Newspaper, we provide concise, expert summaries of Namibia's latest business, economic, and policy developments, delivered digitally every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. It's your essential brief to start the week informed and stay ahead. Now, whether you're looking to grow your business reach, our complimentary apps, including Imba Mobile App and Eagle FM App, offer targeted opportunities for companies to increase visibility of their products and services across a wide spectrum of consumers, whether from urban professionals to rural communities. And let's not forget, our social media platforms are among the most active in the country, giving brands, startups, and individuals the perfect space to amplify their visibility and connect and engage with audiences in real time. Eagle FM, where your voice, your story, and your business are always on the radar. Now, before we go to news beyond the borders, let's take a quick look at today's global economic indicators. In the commodities market, cheese price dropped by 2.27%, followed by palm oil and rapeseed. On the upside, rice led grains rising by nearly 2%. Now, over in metals, platinum rose by 1.13%, while iron also sold grains. However, gold slipped slightly by 0.46%. For energy commodities, natural gas fell by 1.85%, but European and UK natural gas prices increased. Gains were also seen in gasoline, crude oil, WTI, and blend crude. Globally, Pakistan recorded its highest ever remittances, reaching $4.1 billion in March, a 37% increase from last year. The boost is being linked to improved economic stability and strong inflows from countries like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, UK, and the US. Now for stock market updates. Germany's DAX opened over 2% higher, reaching positively to temporarily US tariff exemptions on smartphones, computers, and other electronics from China. The UK's FTSE 100 also climbed up 1.5% as markets welcomed the tariff relief and the kickoff of earnings season. Meanwhile, silver prices pulled back slightly to $32 per ounce after a recent surge as easing trade tensions reduced demand for safe haven assets. And finally, European markets are off to a strong start this week, lifting by optimism over US tariff exemptions, with futures for the Euro Stock 50 and Stock 600 both up over 2% in early trading. And that's what we had for you today on Economic Tradings. We'll now take a short break, and when we return, we'll be taking you through news beyond the borders.
시원하 샤나미비아 감베레라 오마카룽가 코에 밤에 나 임바 이노카라 우리코니마 예시가 엔데라 밤에 네팀보 무유니 워 테크놀로지 이모네나 에임비로 조에모네 콩고디에요 베케 밤에 나 임바 임바 오테타 밤에 오시와나 노코안자가 카네카 온짐보 모시와나 아시헤 샤나미비아 모카 에파카 임바 오타모 아디카 에화타 존짐보 도옹게레카 다요로카 가시 Ehangano ja Elsin, Umaimburiro, Joshi Herero, Simane Kakarunga, Jakatorika Karoma, Joshimburu, Sang Fortier, Nongereka Dimwe. Tudengera nena, ngere wapumba omaimbiro wongere kayoe, zakarega wezwako, koka epa ka imbako, nora hetatu imwe, mbarindatu, tano hetatu, nora hamano datu. Nenge ututumine o email ko digital@omalaiti.com. Otovuruku adha oka epa ka imbako App Store noko Google Play Store. Imo nena imbagoe nena.
Welcome back, and we are back to take you through news beyond the borders. We start off in South Africa, where the Mopani District Municipality has lost 1.5 million rands in fraudulent payments.
The Mopani Municipality's recent audit revealed a significant case of fraud, uncovering over 67 ghost workers employed under the expanded public works program. The investigation began after 100 workers failed to appear for verification, prompting the municipality to probe deeper. The municipality says the cases include a notable instance where a borehole operator admitted to forging a councillor's signature to secure their position. The municipality says they referred all those cases to the courts for alleged fraud.
There are 50 cases of them that are left there. We can't account for them. And that's the cases which the Hawks are following. We have so far estimated around 1.5 million rand that we have lost for the financial year. Now, our suspicion is, for the past many years, we might have lost a lot of money. We believe that with the work of the Hawks going back, making arrests, people attesting, we can be able to quantify for the period.
Mopani Executive Mayor Buleshai has revealed that an investigation uncovered a case of an official receiving a stipend for operating a borehole for 6 years without providing such a service. Shai says they have suspended one official responsible for coordinating the EPWP for alleged fraud.
When we interview through this process, we're able to suspend some officials in that particular space. It's allegations, they will be able to speak for themselves. But our view is, in the context of the culture shift in the municipality, we believe that this investigation, the arrest, will unravel a web which, when we converge as a municipality, we'll be able to put measures to ensure that this kind of risk are mitigated, they don't happen again, and we save the few resources of our public and they're diverted to proper causes.
Some residents in Mopani have called for accountability against those implicated.
Mopani District is a water service provider. They can't just deliver water, clean water, to the communities of these five local municipalities. And if this thing again have a financial impact, you find people are getting paid within the institution, but we are not sure where are they working, where are they from. So that on its own, it's a concern. It's a concern, a serious concern. I think that will need a serious investigation.
It means the law must play its role. This person must be arrested, and whoever that they've been working with, they must be arrested too. Because it means that even the next person who has been receiving money for a work which was not done is also accomplices to this corruption. And also, we want that money, whichever amount which was stolen from the municipality, to be recovered and the people to be brought to book.
The EPWP is a government initiative aimed at creating opportunities for local people. Shai says the suspended officials are currently undergoing a disciplinary process. Karabo Khafane, SABC News, Giyani.
Meanwhile, the government of Zambia is to set up solar plant at Central Veterinary Research Institute.
The Central Veterinary Research Institute has for a long time faced challenges of erratic power supply. This has inconvenienced the safety and animal welfare through spoilage of temperature-sensitive samples and life-saving experiments. This challenge will soon end as government has embarked on installing a solar plant at the Animal Research Institute.
This is a test for you to ensure that there will be no excuses whatsoever that results are taking long. So we expect the turnaround within 5 working days at the most. Okay, so we'll keep a tab on that to ensure that the results come out in 5 working days. Provincial laboratories have got solar power so that we've got, there's no interruption in the carrying out of your tests and giving out results.
And China Chungsu International Green Energy Limited has been contracted to install the solar project.
The project's about 200 kilowatt size, and we are going to deliver on time with quality.
Meanwhile, CVRI Chief Veterinary Research Officer Dr. Doughty George says the plan will help to enhance the operations of the institute.
We would want to appreciate the coming of the minister today, who is coming on board to resolve the critical challenges of power outages by installing the new solar plant at the institute. With the solar plant installed, then the challenges of power might be the thing of the past.
Investing in solar backup systems and stable power supply is crucial in protecting decades of research and the lives depending on it. I'm Josampo reporting in Chilanga.
Rwanda taps Chinese technology to boost the climate smart farming.
Where climate change is increasingly becoming unpredictable, farmers in Rwanda are turning to solar-powered irrigation. This method helps them to farm all year round. Jean Bosco Rutishisha, a retired police officer, is one of the 68 farmers in eastern Rwanda using this green irrigation. He says the technology has transformed his 6-hectare Ruhimbi farm, where he grows avocados and mangoes for export.
On the farm here, we can cultivate throughout the year, and we can have crops throughout the year. Whenever we want to plant, we can, because of the availability of water and the availability of energy that is environmental friendly. For example, you have seen the solar system that we have, which helps us to pump water uphill. So we dug that pond that you saw up down there, and also have solar panels, which can provide like 4.5 kilowatts of power.
Jean Bosco Rutishisha uses 2 dam sheets on his farm. They hold 720 cubic meters of water, fully pumped using solar power. Most of the green irrigation equipment used here is imported from China. Jerome Hiteyezu, who is the head of irrigation at Rwanda Agriculture Board, says the method is efficient. He adds that Rwanda is working to attract investors to set up local production of solar-powered irrigation systems due to its positive impact on the environment.
Most of the time they are imported from China, they are imported from Europe, but most of them are imported from China and India. Yeah, we provide 75% of subsidy to cooperatives, individual farmers, and even a group of farmers. We subsidize.
Why do you do that?
We do that just to improve the technology in the country. We are at a starting point, because we intend to have 5,000 hectares irrigated in NST too.
A group of Chinese investors is currently in Rwanda to explore green irrigation and mechanized farming opportunities. One of them, Hu Xin from Ninjiang Agriculture Associates, says Rwanda's central location in Africa makes it ideal for regional supply.
The agricultural sector has introduced many investment opportunities in Rwanda, and through discussions with officials from Ministry of Agriculture, we believe that our agricultural machinery products can be covered by Rwanda to other East African countries, which is a very big market and investment opportunity.
Today, over 1,600 hectares of farmland in Rwanda use green irrigation. The government's target is to reach 5,000 hectares by 2029.
This eastern region of Rwanda often experiences prolonged droughts, making traditional irrigation systems labor-intensive and inefficient. The introduction of solar-powered systems here has significantly improved farming practices, enhancing water efficiency and crop yields. Ethan Tashegia for CGTN, Rwamagana, eastern Rwanda.
In other news, Kenyan farmers tend to indigenous seed varieties to enhance food security.
Martha Njenga is leading a quiet revolution in her home village of Kamadhada in central Kenya. The farmer is teaching her neighbors traditional seed preservation methods.
Our group is called Mwigudhania. It has 50 members who store their seeds here. The members save their seeds and are able to access them when they want to replant.
The idea is simple. Every season, farmers store seeds suited to their environment. They return to them when the planting season begins anew. Already, they are beginning to feel the impact of this practice.
We used to depend on one type of crop. If you plant maize or beans, you can only harvest once a year, but indigenous varieties like arrowroots can be harvested all year round.
With the prices of commercial seeds rising, more farmers are opting for traditional seed varieties. Recognizing this shift, the Kenyan government has begun promoting innovations in agriculture. At a recent event, research institutes and agricultural organizations showcased climate-smart solutions ranging from improved seed varieties to digital tools.
We are working towards a scientist to ensure that those indigenous crops are improved and brought into the market so that the farmers will continue enjoying them in certified manner to ensure that you are guaranteed of the quality of the material. When you are planting, you know exactly what you are planting and you are guaranteed of it.
Since 2012, the sale of uncertified seeds has been banned under Kenyan law, a move aimed at protecting farmers from fake seed dealers. But this hasn't stopped farmers from organizing their own informal seed exchanges.
80% of the seeds that are used in growing our food coming from the farmers themselves. So if someone was to depend on commercial seed system to have all the farmers access seeds, it means we shall lose capacity to produce 80% of the food that we are producing.
With their seeds secured, these farmers are now looking forward to the rainy season, which is just around the corner. Bukisa Nyabwasi, GTN.
Nigeria taps creative industry to boost economic growth.
Abuja-based drummer Marcus Hassan has been posting his performances online since 2013. He now commands nearly 500,000 followers across various social media platforms, bringing in a steady income.
I post like once a month, you know, but then the traction, the constant views coming in from people, new subscribers and, you know, new viewers keeps piling up, you know. But on a good day, if I post 2-3 times, I could make up to $1,000 a month.
The government wants to replicate this kind of success. Currently, the creative sector employs over 4 million Nigerians, but Nigeria wants to double that number within 3 years. Content creator Oluchi Anibogu says achieving that goal depends on targeted support.
As someone who holds interest in this particular field, I would like to know how you'd like to come in to help me, and you know how this would affect me personally and affect, you know, what I've managed to build or to plant.
Authorities say new investments in training, infrastructure, and reforms are underway. But challenges like poor intellectual property protection and limited monetization options remain. Still, officials believe Nigeria's creative products already have international appeal.
We have a creative and cultural product that we can easily market internally. And also considering the population of our country, we know that we have our own market. We also have the international markets who are seriously aching to participate or partake in our creative product. It was a no-brainer, really, that the government would look at the sector as an important area to invest in.
Despite the challenges, Nigeria's creative space is brimming with opportunity. From music and films to arts, crafts and fashion, the world is already watching. As the country pushes to grow the industry through stronger policies and investments, content creators like Marcus and Oluchi are already proving its value. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
French diplomats are given 48-hour notice to leave Algeria.
Algeria has instructed 12 French officials to leave the country within 48 hours, as stated by the French foreign minister on Monday. This action is reportedly related to the arrest of three Algerian nationals in France. A diplomatic source revealed that among those asked to depart are members of the French Interior Ministry. This incident follows the indictment of three Algerians, including consular officials by French prosecutors on Friday, who are suspected of participating in the abduction of Algerian influencer Amir Boukos in a Paris suburb in April 2024. Known as Amir DZ, Boukos is a vocal opponent of the Algerian government and has amassed over 1 million followers on TikTok and was granted political asylum in 2023. The Algerian government is calling for his return to face legal proceedings, having issued 9 international arrest warrants against him for alleged fraud and terrorism. This situation puts additional pressure on a relationship that is already in despair. For decades, the ties between Paris and Algiers have been intricate despite ongoing efforts to enhance their relationship.
Volodymyr Zelensky urges Donald Trump to visit Ukraine ahead of the deal.
President Zelensky has urged Donald Trump to visit Ukraine to witness the devastation caused by Russia's invasion. Ukrainian officials have accused Russia of using cluster munitions to maximize casualties in its ballistic missile attack on the city of Sumy on Sunday. The Ukrainian president told CBS News that before there were any decisions or negotiations with Moscow, President Trump should come and see for himself the devastation happening in Ukraine.
You think you understand what's going on here? Okay, we respect your position. You understand. But please, before any kind of decisions, any kind of formats of negotiations, come to see people, civilians, warriors, hospitals, churches, children, destroyed or dead. Come, look, and then let's move with the plan how to finish the war. You will understand with whom you have a deal. You will understand what Putin did.
Well, let's speak to James Waterhouse, who is in Sumy. James, welcome to you. An understandably angry reaction from President Zelensky there, and also some criticism from Washington.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the scene this morning is of a continued recovery effort, or it seems like rescue crews are clearing up the endless debris. There is shattered glass everywhere, and I'm standing in the middle of two blast zones where two ballistic missiles slammed into Sumy yesterday. These are several historic university buildings which have been pretty much destroyed from both impacts, and the site here 24 hours ago was one of deep devastation. Bodies were strewn everywhere, reflecting the civilian casualty pile from such an attack. Now, Donald Trump was asked about this attack. He described it as a horrible thing. He even suggested that Russia may have made a mistake. But I think when you're talking about ballistic missiles launched at a Ukrainian city on a bustling Sunday morning, it is clear Moscow wanted to inflict heavy casualties. In the past, it talks about a military dimension to its strikes. And even if that was so, even if there was a gathering of soldiers, for example, this is seen as acceptable collateral for Russia. It always has been. Now, President Zelensky is trying to bridge a widening gap between an America which is trying to spearhead ceasefire talks still, and Russia looking to capitalize on that endeavor. You are not seeing the White House after this attack condemn Russia. for the missile strikes. And I think President Zelensky now is trying to use moments like this to convince American officials to come and see the realities of Russia's invasion for themselves. He is also reiterating his argument that if the West does not take a strong stance against Russia in these ceasefire endeavors, then Moscow won't stop here. It will then go for other European countries, possibly NATO countries, to, in the words of President Zelensky, restore the lost Russian empire. So you can see the strategy President Zelensky is using here, but it's a high-risk one because in the past, when he has taken a defiant tone, that has angled Donald Trump to the extent that he has paused military aid for Ukraine. Nevertheless, this, against the backdrop of continued airstrikes against cities like Sumy, which are 30 kilometers from the border, this has been an attack which very much has stood out from the rest.
Yeah, and James, we heard President Zelensky again reiterate his invitation to President Trump, asking him to come and see for himself what's happening in Ukraine. We know that the former president, Joe Biden, did visit Ukraine after the Russian invasion started. How likely is it, do you think, that the current U.S. president could go there himself?
I think it's 50-50 at this point. You know, Donald Trump said when they first met, Zelensky and Trump, last September, that he would visit Ukraine. He's since suggested that he wouldn't be coming anytime soon. Meanwhile, the senior U.S. envoy, Steve Witkoff, has had three meetings with Vladimir Putin. He was in St. Petersburg last Friday, where they warmly met each other. And concerningly for Ukraine, it was where the Kremlin has repeated its demands for how this war should end. It is making no concessions. It still wants the complete control of four Ukrainian provinces and the political capitulation of Ukraine. There is no climbing down from there. So Ukraine is in this impossible position of having to mimic or mirror America's desire, its impatience for peace, but also to try and protect its interests and defend itself, as Russia, certainly in this part of northeastern Ukraine, seemingly tries to continue to try and soften cities, and in the eyes of Kyiv, gather thousands of troops to try and mount a major offensive of some kind, not least with the improving of this weather for battlefield conditions. So Ukraine is playing this juggling act whilst America seems to try and continue its quest for peace by appeasing Russia and trying to keep it at the table and not condemning it.
Okay, James in Sumy, thank you.
Trump's tariffs, China calls on the U.S. to correct its mistakes.
To Donald Trump's trade war now, and China has called on the United States to cancel all tariffs after Washington announced exemptions for some consumer electronics. In a statement, Beijing's Commerce Ministry called the exemptions a small step, but urged the U.S. to return to a path of mutual respect and to correct what it called Washington's mistakes. On Saturday, Chinese import tariffs of 125% on American goods took effect in retaliation for Trump's 145% levy on Chinese imports to the United States. So let's speak now to Veena Najibullah, the Vice President for Research and Strategy at the Asia-Pacific Foundation of Canada, joining us today from Montreal. So President Trump here exempting some electronic goods from the tariffs imposed on imports from China. How much of a climb down do you see this as?
Yes, good morning. This is definitely a concession, but it's a concession largely made to U.S. Tech companies who have been pressuring President Trump for exemptions. So the big winners here are, of course, Apple, NVIDIA, Dell, and other companies. This is a slight de-escalation in the trade war on China because about 24% of what U.S. imports from China fall under these categories of electronic goods. And it's also a big win and it's certainly a cause for relief for most of Southeast Asian economies like Vietnam, Malaysia, Cambodia, that export a lot of electronic goods to the U.S.
Yeah, that is a really important point to include as well. Trump has said that many countries have been calling the White House to try to negotiate over these tariffs. Do you think that he is expecting China to try to do the same?
Absolutely. So President Trump keeps saying that he believes that there will be negotiations, that China wants to negotiate and is simply trying to find the best way to do that. But I think an important point here is that China of 2025 is not China of 2018. China and President Xi now has a lot more options, and we've seen that, not just in being able to meet the tariffs that U.S. is imposing, sort of tit for tat, dollar for dollar, but also to use other tools, export controls, various investigations into U.S. companies, banning of Hollywood movies and so forth. So I think we will see a lot more forceful pushback from China. But of course, at the end of the day, China needs a U.S. market. About $500 billion of exports from China. It's not going to be easy for them to find alternatives. So they will make deals. But the difficulty here is how long would those deals last? Because even on these electronic good exemptions, we are now hearing this morning that maybe they're only going to be in place for 1 or 2 months. So a lot of unpredictability and volatility here.
And what does that unpredictability actually mean for the Chinese market and for its consumers?
Well, it essentially, of course, there will be short-term economic pain. There will be an impact on economic growth in China, but ultimately China will try to continue to find alternative markets, make deals with others. We're already seeing this, a charm offensive with Southeast Asia, with President Xi traveling to Southeast Asia this week, also with Europe in terms of the visiting delegations from Spain and conversations with EU. So it's going to be really difficult for some of these other economies because they would want to continue to have stable and good relations with China. But on the other hand, they want to protect their markets because they don't want to see Chinese products that are not able to come to the U.S. being dumped on their markets and impacting their manufacturing. So we will see moves towards decoupling between U.S. and China. There will be ups and downs, temporary relief, but I think overall direction of travel is that both U.S. and China are trying to decouple and reroute supply chains. That's going to create a lot of uncertainty for others who are trying to negotiate with both superpowers and a lot of unpredictability for the market and for consumers.
And just very, very briefly before I let you go, what do you think we might see this week? I mean, could we see China coming to Trump to try to make some of these deals?
I mean, it's interesting. We've seen China now saying that they're not going to increase the tariffs, that basically the tariffs that they now.
You know, that has brought us to the conclusion of today's On the Radar News Bulletin. Up next is the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by David Shombe. Right after that, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut will keep you company on your way back home. Now do enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Goodbye.